Hello and welcome to the latest Brewin podcast. European politics all consuming at the moment, but as the week finishes, we do have some seemingly better news out of Italy, but a deterioration in the story in Spain. They say a day is a long time in politics, and so it proved this week, as this recording took place on Thursday the 31st of May, when fresh elections in Italy seemed to be the most likely outcome. Just a day later, Friday the 1st of June, here we are, and we've got a new government installed. But despite this change, this content is still highly relevant, as the government has some important policy decisions to make and some that can have far-reaching effects on capital markets. So as investors, you know, a very serious and useful podcast to listen to. Our guest speaker, our expert speaker, is Davil Joshi, the Chief European Strategist at BCA Research. And here is how he sees the prospect of an Italian EU showdown.
In this sort of game of chicken, Greece was a flimsy bicycle. You know, no one really cared if they sort of came crashing into you. I think Italy is more like a truck.
Okay, so quite a vivid analogy there. But to see how this could all play out, as well as some more broad comments on the health of the European economy and the investment opportunities, please keep listening. But first, here are our disclaimers.
The value of investments can fall and you may get back less than you invested. Past performance is not a reliable guide to future performance. The podcast is not intended as investment advice. No investment is suitable in all cases. We or a connected party may have an interest in the securities mentioned or may act as principal or agent in those securities from time to time. The podcast content comes from diverse sources whose accuracy cannot be assured. The opinions expressed in this publication are not necessarily held throughout Brewin Dolphin. Investment in currencies other than your own means changes in the exchange rate will cause the value of your investment to move independently of the underlying asset.
Hello everyone, and welcome to the latest Brewin podcast. I'm Ben Gutteridge, Head of Fund Research, and today we're going to be looking at some European investment strategy, and delighted to welcome Davil Joshi of BCA Research, a research provider we use here at Brewin Dolphin, to talk us through the various issues that are plaguing the continent at the moment, and how the resolution of those issues, or where those issues could go, could influence our investment thinking. So, Davil, thanks very much for coming in. I have to say, I do enjoy your weekly pieces that come out. You do draw on some pretty diverse economic theory, but you're very easy to rationalise, and certainly when you explain it. So, by all means, draw upon some of that as we go through, particularly into the investment piece. But as I said, from the top, I think we need to, there's no better place to start. The obvious place to start is Italy. It looks as though, by all means, counter this, but it looks as though we're looking at the proposed government is going to fall pretty soon in a vote of no confidence, and that we're looking at fresh elections. I mean, the media, quarters of the media are referring to those fresh elections as perhaps a referendum on the euro. We would certainly suggest that is going too far. But give us your take on the subject matter, and, you know, think about some of the places this could take us.
Okay, so the way I would look at it is that Italy could go into either a vicious circle at this point or a virtuous circle. So we're sort of, that's a sort of fork in the road. Or sort of put it another way, you know, negative feedback, positive feedback. So the issue is that if the market panics because of this extra uncertainty, you get this sort of negative feedback, because higher bond yields in Italy are going to hurt the banking system. The banks are very fragile. They own a lot of BTPs, Italian bonds. So as those bond values drop, the banks become more fragile. They're not going to lend. The economy then sort of weakens. There's sort of recovery that's sort of very putative at this point. Embryonic will sort of die away. People will get even more irritated with their standard of living, and potentially sort of gravitate towards the populists again. So the whole thing sort of spirals out of control. And I think that's the sort of the risk in the coming weeks and months. Now, the alternative, when I thought the alternative was a possibility, until what's happened most recently, is a sort of a virtuous circle whereby you do get a little bit of stimulus in the economy, nothing sort of really sort of outlandish, not like the 6% fiscal stimulus that they were talking about, something sort of a bit more modest. That sort of kickstarts the economy. NPLs drop, the banking sector improves, they sort of lend more. So it's basically the opposite of what I said earlier. So my sort of thinking was, actually, I can see a case of a virtuous circle holding.
I mean, do you think we have to go through one to arrive at the other? Do you think the investment community takes fright at the proposed agenda from this five-star Liga Nord combination and bond markets react, and that sort of, as history has played out in the past, tempers down the policy options for that coalition?
Yes, but I think that it would require, in this case, you do require sort of a political response to say, actually, we're sort of dialing down the rhetoric. We're not going to, we want some leeway from Brussels and from Germany. And we're going to sort of come to some compromise. In other words, there has to be some sort of walking back from the politicians. And in this sense, it's slightly different to the crisis we had a few years ago, where you could say that speculators were attacking bond markets in Spain, Italy, and so on. And then the ECB could come in and sort of do whatever it takes, because that was really a sort of liquidity, sort of stroke financial, crisis more than anything else. And therefore, the ECB could solve it. In this instance, I'm not sure the ECB is in a position to say, we'll do whatever it takes to solve this crisis, because it is more of a political crisis. But what I would also point out is a lot of these sort of the extreme rhetoric that you've heard from Five Star and Liga Nord, their sort of opening position, let's say, is a sort of their opening position. It's not necessarily where they're going to end up. It's a bit like with Brexit. The sort of the opening position that Theresa May took, if you remember, was all guns blazing. We're not going to pay a single penny in a divorce bill. The Irish problem, oh, that's not an issue. We'll solve it. Don't worry. We've got, we'll come up with something. And now as time has gone on, there's more realism attached to what that actually means. So she sort of walked back. It's the same in Italy. I think the populists, hopefully walk back some of their more aggressive proposals.
But as a function of capital markets or European political institution powers saying, opening up their fiscal restraints, or is it just going to be a function of capital markets preventing them from
I think
executing?
It's going to be a bit of... I think for politicians, it really depends on popularity. So if, say, Liga Nord, say, Salvini says, hang on, my aggressive stance is actually pulling in votes for me from as far as I can measure it from opinion polls, he's not going to really back down. It's only when you see a backlash, when your Italian household says, hang on a minute, I'm feeling the pain, my savings are getting hurt, or my wealth is getting hurt. And so we need one of two things. Either we need to see the opinion polls shift back to the centre, and I think the markets will really like that. As I say, look, they experimented with the populists, and they're now fearing what that means. Or they don't, the people don't gravitate to the centre, but the populists sort of water down some of the sort of more aggressive proposals, and then the markets will sort of will respond favourably. But there's a chance that before that happens, they go the other way.
Well, I do want to move on to other subjects, but I don't know what polling data you've observed, but my understanding was that Liga Nord are the big winners so far in this political sort of turf war, and if that were to momentum were to carry through into the next, do you think their campaign into the coming election would be one of outright Euro scepticism, or do you think they'll maintain the status quo? Because it was the finance minister who was an outright Euro sceptic, which didn't quite run true to the campaign or the grounds for the president to prevent a government being formed. So they sort of almost had their bluff being called here. They have to be Euro sceptic or not, don't they?
Yeah, but I think there's a sort of, if you like, a benign way of being Eurosceptic, which is to say, look, we're pushing back against Brussels, we're pushing back against a lot of the more aggressive sort of fiscal restraint, which is counterproductive Italy, but not go as far as say we're against the euro. Because that's the thing that I think would really hurt markets and turn this into something, you know, much nastier. Because let's face it, the euro can't exist without Italy, because Italy's too big an economy. You know, and that's what differentiates it from the Greece situation, because if you think about it as in game theory terms, Greece didn't really have any power in the negotiations, because it was kind of, look, you play by our rules or you're out and we can afford to lose you. But in the case of Italy, I don't think it's, you know, I don't think it's like that. I think, so the analogy I would draw is that, you know, in this sort of game of chicken, Greece was a flimsy bicycle. You know, no one really cared if they sort of came crashing into you. I think Italy is more like a truck.
It's much more like a scene out of Footloose than this, what we're dealing with here.
Yeah. So that's why it makes it more complicated, a bit more dangerous.
Okay. Well, recognizing the complexity and recognizing how much time we've spent on this, arguably an unfair question, but you know, what is your sort of guidance to investors? Is it a time to retrench, to get very defensive, or recognizing that it's so binary and very difficult to call? You know, are there signals that we need to monitor that should take us more aggressive or one way or the other?
Yeah, so I sort of defined as what I call a line in the sand for Italy, where I would start to get much more worried, and that's when the 10-year BTP yield, so the 10-year Italian bond yield, gets to 4%, and that would be quite worrying for me.
And just in case our listeners aren't aware, the current 10-year is...
It's around 3.
Yeah, okay.
Or just below 3 it was yesterday. So, you know, we're not there yet. But I think that's the sort of point at which I calculate the solvency of the banks really comes into question. So the banking system, which is, you know, after many, many years, got itself sort of, you know, above water in terms of solvency. And that only happened in the last couple of years. Because of the loss they would incur on their bond holdings, suddenly you question the investors will say, are the banks solvent? And therefore, that to me is a danger point. And I would say at that point, I'm going to sort of de-risk, you know. Until then, I'm sort of just sticking with my strategy that this won't turn into this is a drama, not yet a crisis. But at those higher bond yields, it can risk it being a crisis. So until then, I'm not sort of aggressively de-risking, but I'm not gung-ho positive at the moment either in terms of my positioning in equities.
Well, I mean, that's interesting you say that, because you have been one of the more contrarian strategists out there. I mean, 2017 certainly elevated animal spirits, and yet you were able to look at a framework that presented a more cautious view going into 2018, which has indeed played out. There's definitely signs of global economy slowing, particularly in Europe, you know, some distance from recession, but slowing. I mean, if you are able to, a brief synopsis of how you're able to call that and what those signals are sending us into sort of the medium term.
So I think that there is, we do get these very regular oscillations in global growth. I call them mini cycles, because they're not full economic cycles. They're just oscillations within a bigger business cycle. And they're caused by credit accelerations and decelerations. And 2017 was characterized by, you know, to me very clearly by an acceleration in credit growth around the world in the big economies. And the way I look at it is, look, once you get to sort of a typical upswing length of around, you know, 8 months or so, normally you should say, well, look, you know, this is a typical length. You should be looking for a deceleration. How does it happen? Well, basically, you know, bond yields have generally gone up in that phase, and that triggers the next sort of mini deceleration. And that's kind of where we are at the moment. And that's really characterized the start of this year. That's why the cyclicals have underperformed. Banks have underperformed. And I think we're sort of midway through this. So I would say typically this will take us into the summer. And by the second half of the year, or late summer, I'd say we could have an upswing. However, the slight complication is that bond yields haven't really come down yet. So normally you'd want to see bond yields come down to trigger the next mini upswing, but we haven't seen that just yet. So I'm sticking with my...
We saw a bit of it, not necessarily in peripheral Europe, but we've seen a bit of it.
We have seen a bit of it, but And yeah, that's a good sign, because I think if we sort of, if this is like the turning point, a mini turning point in bond deal, they sort of back off by, you know, 50 bips or whatever, then I think that that fits into my narrative that later this year, or maybe later this summer, you want to sort of buy banks, buy basic materials and so on. But I don't think we're there yet. Because if we look at the 10-year treasury, for example, that's still around 290, or just off 280 or 290, that sort of area. So you're not really that far from the recent peak of whatever it was, 310. It's not a meaningful decline. So that's kind of what I'm looking for. If bond yields stay high, it sort of, it makes it harder to be gung-ho positive.
Okay, so just trying to rationalize those few components in that you predicted a downturn, and also at the moment we're dealing with a drama, not a crisis. So predicting that downturn would take you out of equities. The fact that we're in a drama, not a crisis, that you've said you're not aggressively de-risking. So all that together, you know, you've got a slowing growth, challenges in Italy, and yet you're still, what, overweight equities or more exposed to equities than some of the more defensive asset classes. And you, can you see that there is some conflict in that?
Well, I'd say that my position on equities is a sort of low conviction. I think we've been in a trading range for the market this year. And I think, my central case is that's where we remain unless Italy sort of blows up. Or bond yields keep rising. So I've got a very simple way of looking at this. I call it the rule of four. If the Italian bond yield gets to four, I will worry. The other thing that will make me worry is if the addition, the sum of the treasury yield and the bund yield gets to four. So what I'm saying is take the treasury yield, which is currently 280, add on the bund yield, which is, let's say, 50, you got to 3.3, right? If that got up to four, that to me is another sort of sign to rein back, because equity valuations would come under pressure at that point. So those are the things, the two fours is what I'm looking for.
Yeah, and they're not a million miles away, which is perfectly reasonable, therefore, that you can only exhibit a low conviction view on equities. I mean, let's think about some other asset classes then. Well, let's look at currency within your framework. I know you've spent a bit of time on that, and congratulations on calling the euro so successfully, but clearly that currency this year is not being, well, certainly against the dollar, not being so strong, and is under the spotlight at the moment.
So I think that I don't have a short, I mean, basically the euro went up very sharply, went up from 103 to pretty much 125. So certainly from, it overshot the fundamentals. I think the fundamentals were saying, 120 was about right, based on what the ECB was planning to do, based on the euro area economy recovery and so on. So it obviously went through that. So we saw this sort of, just a sort of the excess, the overshoot got cancelled out. Thereafter, Italy has obviously taken it down. So my point, what I'm saying now is if we don't get to this sort of line in the sand, then I think, the euro will sort of hang in there. If we get to the line in the sand, I'd say, look, I'm bailing out of the euro. Again, that's the key decision, because I think it's around, assuming that Italy is just a drama, not a crisis, then I think the euro will sort of, will be supported. And that's what you've seen in the last couple of days. It's sort of come off a little off those lows. In terms of the short-term currency, which I think is interesting, I think this is a trade more than anything else. I think the Polish zloty has sold off too far. Based purely on technicals, we put on a trade to buy the Polish zloty against the US dollar with 3.5% target. It's nothing huge. From a technical perspective, that looks quite interesting.
Did it get oversold on fears that Poland were going to be the next departing member from the European Union? Is that?
I think that it just got caught in the sort of downdraft in EM.
Okay.
And I don't think that's really fair for Poland, because I think, a lot of EM markets aren't really EM, but they're sort of clubbed together in that sort of basket. Poland is nowhere near it. It's not an emerging market. It's a very developed market. It's actually not that different from most other European economies. So it's just got caught in that downdraft. So from a technical perspective, I think that's an interesting place, you know, if you're just saying what's an interesting trade in the next 3 months, that could be a good one to look at.
Okay, so I mentioned, just to round out in terms of the broad health, and as you keep caveating, and I will caveat as well, so the Italy issue aside, we have seen European data disappoint a bit more this year. You know, other, you know, the headline economies, France, Germany, Spain, you know, is there not some really, you know, positive things to say about these economies? I know Germany's is a clearly an obvious one, but, you know, broadly, there's a slowdown, but still encouraging signs of growth there.
Yeah, I think that, you know, a lot of the sort of comparisons we make between Europe and, you know, other economies, like, say, the US, are slightly distorted by we're not comparing like for like. So when we look at, for example, employment in the euro area, you know, the thing is if we have excess... if we have slack in Europe, it's shown in unemployment. So everyone's, you know, points out unemployment is high. In the US, it's shown in a very different way. It's shown in participation. So people drop out of the labor force. So if you sort of adjust for that, there isn't, you know, there isn't as big a difference in the labor markets as meets the eye. So what was, you know, people say, well, unemployment's so low in the US, which is true, but a lot of people have left the labor force, especially, you know, young males. So what I'm saying is a slack. There is slack in the US, but it's captured in a different way. It's people who just left the labor force. In Europe, it's people don't leave the labor force because you're incentivized to stay connected because of things like benefits. So it shows up as unemployment. But when you adjust for that, the difference between, say, France and the US is much less than meets the eye. And also with inflation, it's really important to realize that we're not actually comparing like for like, because in, Europe, we don't include housing or what's known as shelter in the inflation measure, whereas in the US they do. So, and that's a very big weight. It's about 30% of inflation in the US is house prices. If we were to sort of allow for that difference, actually inflation isn't really that different either. So what I'm saying is fundamentally, you know, stripping out all these differences, that, you know, there isn't a huge difference between what's going on in Europe in aggregate and the US. But obviously, you know, looking at individual economies like Italy, you could say, yes, Italy has lagged, whereas Germany has done very well. And that's probably a bigger issue in Europe is the spread of growth rather than the aggregate, which is actually doing okay.
And then I guess almost my final question would be, you know, bringing Italy back into the equation. I know we've talked about currencies, but does the ECB now have to behave or communicate and act in a different way whilst it's dealing with this drama? You know, clearly it's about to end its asset purchase program. It said it would take some time until it starts raising interest rates. I mean, will it have to communicate with us in a more dovish, a more conversative way?
I think they'd certainly have to reference what's going on in their language. You know, there's something like political risks have increased. You know, in the usual coded form that they do, I'd be very surprised if they did not refer to it. And in a sense, it would sort of impact the way they look at the world and how they escape from this ultra accommodative stance. I mean, I think the forward guidance, you know, they will certainly make some reference on the forward guidance front in terms of when they're actually going to raise rates. I mean, that might be pushed back a little bit, but I think they do want to exit the asset purchase program because technically it's becoming very difficult.
And then my final question would be within Europe, and I know you have a sort of a unique take on this, reflecting of the sectors that you prefer, but within Europe, you know, what seems the most appealing equity markets at this time?
So I would sort of say, if we're saying avoid the really cyclical sectors for the time being, say avoid banks, that necessarily means you should be underweight those markets which are heavy in banks. So obviously Italy is one of them. Spain is another one. Obviously, you know, Italy can obviously move on the domestic politics, of course. So yeah, if things ease off, obviously it's going to sort of snap back a little bit. But notwithstanding that, I'm saying for the time being, I wouldn't want to be long banks. So, you know, avoid those two for the time being or underweight them. And conversely, you know, out of the main markets, France is the one to go for because it's underweight banks and it's got a nice sector mix for the way I'm seeing the world at the moment. If you like to own healthcare, then have a bit of Switzerland and Denmark because they're very heavy in healthcare.
Well, I'm waiting for you to say the UK, Darvel, because
the UK should be all right. The UK could be all right in all of this because it's, you know, it's. I mean, the issue there is really is commodities because it's very heavy in oil and basic materials. But in the sort of overall, when I look at the overall mix, it's one of my sort of mild overweights. But it's not like one of my top overweights. And the other one that's really interesting, in a funny sort of way, is Ireland, because it's just it's a really funny system. The Irish equity market has nothing to do with Ireland. It's really to do with the leading companies, of which one is Ryanair. So if that really is an oil price play, if oil prices could sort of level off or even come back, that actually benefits Ireland through Ryanair. So that's, you know, I think the anomaly, we've had a very big move up in oil. And if you see any sort of retracement, that helps Ireland.
Okay, well, we look forward to speaking to Bob Ryan about that at BCA, your energy strategist. But for now, we're out of time, Darvel. Thanks so much for all that extremely useful and also the broader framework. So thanks very much for your contribution. To listeners, thanks very much for listening. Let us know what you think on Twitter, referencing #BrewingPodcast. Leave a review on iTunes or SoundCloud. But until next time, many thanks for listening.